is Friday night in North America because of the international dateline. Saturday Night with Phil O'Brien, which is, they call it an evening of requests, nostalgia, and musical memories. And it's an all-request show nationwide. And he basically plays obscure requests. Like, he doesn't want to hear you say, oh, I want...
Hi, my name's Rick Serrano from Catskill, New York. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre.
This is Miles from Hudson. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Hudson, Catskill.
Tune in to all sorts of live radio shows every Sunday on WGXC 90.7 FM, beginning at 8 a.m., where the Reverend Kim Singletary is live with There's a Bright Side Somewhere from Columbia County, every Sunday at 8 a.m. Then at 9 a.m., Janessa Hope McKay brings you a slap of reality live from the WGXC studio in Hudson in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street. She's playing her top music picks and talking about her hot topics of the week until 11 a.m. At 1 p.m., every Sunday, DJ Neva Wartell is live with Music for the Masses from Catskill, with sounds from around the world. At 4 p.m. every Sunday, Carlene Murphy and Azuka Legba are live with the Lile Latan version of the WGXC Afternoon Show until 6 p.m. And every Sunday night, Tony Fallon is live with the Irish Show at 8 p.m. on the radio from Acre on 90.7 WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Carrie and Donald Gardner of Athens, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Info, music, signals, news, fun and frolic, and emergency instructions.
90.7 FM, WGXC.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Andrea Makel reports for Porcupine Soup that Greene County has a skeleton crew of 911 operators as unemployment continues to drop locally and nationally. On August 3rd, at the Greene County Legislature's Public Safety Committee, Emergency Services Director John P. Farrell Jr. said the county has four vacant positions for 911 operators and is not able to have its normal three dispatchers on duty each shift. Farrell said, and I quote, "So they have been running two per shift for the last 5 weeks," end quote. In July, the reduced staff of dispatchers answered 656 EMS calls, 230 fire calls, 1,412 police calls, and 885 miscellaneous calls. Farrell said, and I quote, "It was a pretty busy month, to say the least. They are doing a heck of a job," end quote. Legislator Darrell E. Legg, a Democrat representing Hunter, Lexington, and Halcott, said, and I quote, "We have to offer these people a better living and more incentives," end quote. Currently, dispatchers in Greene County begin at $37,867 per year and earn $40,872,000 after training. Greene County Administrator Sean Groden said the contract for dispatchers is up for renewal soon. "So it would be a good time to discuss salaries. So it would be a good time to discuss salaries." Read more about this story at porcupinesoup.com. Lorna Charott Littleway in the Columbia paper previews the August 19th congressional district elections. "There is one contest for all voters and another for just Democrats. Republican Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro and Democrat Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan are running for the final weeks of Democrat Antonio Delgado's term, as he has abandoned the post to become lieutenant governor. The other election is a primary vote for the new 19th congressional district that goes into effect in January and does not include Dutchess County, but does extend the district west to include Broome and Tioga counties. Democrat Jamie Chaney is running against Democrat Josh Riley in the primary election. In both elections, voting begins August 13th and ends August 23rd. In Columbia County, voting from August 13th to August 21st is only at the county office building at 401 State Street in Hudson and the Martin H. Glenn Municipal Building in Valencia. In Greene County, voting August 13th through 21st takes place only at the Greene County office building in Catskill. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper. Ryan Whalen reports at New York State of Politics that Supreme Court Justice Patrick McAllister on August 4th ordered that any change of political party enrollments received on or after August 12th in New York will not be effective until August 30th, closing a loophole in the unusual election this summer. When McAllister scheduled the August elections after quashing the redistricting plan set by legislators, his wording was not completely exact, and he left a loophole that would allow voters to switch parties up to and the day of the election. Erie County Republican Elections Commissioner Ralph Moore said, and I quote, there are still shenanigans that can occur within the next week. I would have preferred that the judge, both for technical reasons and to give the Board of Elections time to prepare and to stop any party raiding. I wish he would have picked an earlier day than August 12th, end quote. Election officials will now have to update the poll books the night before voting begins. And you can read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather reports, public meetings, the community calendar, and COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please consider clicking on the donate button to become a sustaining supporter or to make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
The U.S. military burn pits other victims, Iraqi and Afghan civilians. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Military veterans and their supporters camped out in front of the U.S. Capitol for close to a week after Republican senators withdrew their support for a major expansion of health care for veterans exposed to toxic burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. Formerly titled the Sergeant First Class Heath Robinson, Honoring Our Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxics Act of 2022, the PACT Act targets the Pentagon's reliance on burn pits for disposing of the vast amounts of waste produced during the invasions and occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan. Plumes of polluted smoke and particulates from the burn pits injured up to an estimated 3.5 million U.S. service members over the past two decades. After blocking the bill, Senate Republicans faced withering criticism from veterans and their supporters, including the renowned comedian Jon Stewart.
I'm not sure I've ever seen a situation where people who have already given so much had to fight so hard to get so little.
Said Jon Stewart, deadly serious, flanked by vets and families of veterans who died from the exposure. Earlier, Jon Stewart assailed the Republicans.
Ain't this a bitch? America's heroes who fought in our wars outside sweating their asses off with oxygen, battling all kinds of ailments while these mother sit in the air conditioning, walled off from any of it. They don't have to hear it. They don't have to see it.
Jon Stewart wept after the Senate finally passed the bill. Burn pits were used to dispose of everything from trash, tires, paint and other volatile organic solvents, batteries, unexploded ordnance, petroleum products, plastics and medical waste, including body parts. These constantly burning dumps were often sited adjacent to barracks. Little or no protective gear was provided for impacted soldiers.
Burn pits are massive incineration fields, sometimes as big as football fields, but of course there were many smaller ones throughout Iraq and Afghanistan as well.
That's Purdue University anthropology professor Kali Rabai on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. The Department of Veterans Affairs has identified a slew of cancers related to burn pit exposure, along with skin problems, asthma, bronchitis, respiratory, pulmonary, and cardiovascular problems, migraines, and other neurological conditions. These illnesses could have been prevented. The military typically used jet or diesel fuel to burn everything, creating far more pollution than high-temperature incinerators. But using incinerators would have cost more money. Waste disposal was handled by the military contractor Kellogg Brown & Root, or KBR, a subsidiary of Halliburton. Halliburton's CEO prior to 2001 was Dick Cheney. Cheney then became U.S. vice president and was a key architect of the invasions and occupations of Afghanistan and Iraq. KBR received no-bid contracts to handle an array of logistics for the wars, including waste disposal. KBR chose cheap and dirty burn pits, maximizing profits. War is a racket, retired U.S. Marine Major General Smedley Butler wrote in 1935. Butler was a career Marine, admitting in a 1931 speech, I spent most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street and the bankers, Butler said. I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism, he said. The close to $700 billion appropriated by the PACT Act for the next 10 years will help alleviate some suffering caused by Halliburton's war profiteering, but only for U.S. victims. It won't do a thing for the people of Iraq and Afghanistan.
Veterans saw acute short-term exposure to burn pits at peak health at the prime of their lives.
Again, that's Professor Khali Rabai, who recently returned from the heavily war-impacted Iraqi city of Fallujah.
Iraqis faced long-term diffuse exposure at all stages of the life course, so the health effects were varied and widespread. There is epidemiological evidence that living near U.S. bases in Iraq, and therefore near burn pits, increased the likelihood of giving birth to a child with a birth defect or of getting cancer. So those are some of the most acute long-term effects. Burn pits are not the biggest figure of environmental and health harm for Iraqis. They've also been facing military occupation, bombings, shootings, displacement, and layers of military incursion by different occupation forces since the U.S. invasion. And these things have all added up to collapse in public infrastructure that would be used to contend with the health effects of burn pits, poor overall health, and then, of course, damaged conditions for farming and fishing.
Professor Khali Rabai concluded,
there is one really great way to avoid war-related injury, which is to not go.
The scars of the U.S. invasions and occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan are deep, spanning decades. We'll never know how many millions were killed and injured. The United States bears responsibility and owes the survivors reparations, no less than has been pledged belatedly to U.S. veterans. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly after 8 a.m. It will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 87 degrees. There will be a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms before 2 a.m. on Saturday night, which will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 68 degrees. And on Sunday, a slight chance of showers, then showers and thunderstorms after 11 a.m. It will be sunny and hot with a temperature high near 90 degrees. And Sunday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms mainly before 8 p.m. It will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 69 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC 90.7 FM radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Hello and welcome to the Better Weather Weekend Recreational Update. In the depth of winter, we take it easy, stay inside, and hide from the weather. Let's recapture that mindset, shall we? Because heat levels will range from uncomfortable to dangerous. So if you do go out, take extra precautions. Your Rip Van Winkle sandbar times on Saturday will be from 2:15 a.m. to 5:45 a.m. and again from 2:30 p.m. to 5:55 p.m. Tidal current will be average. On Sunday, the sandbar will appear from 4 to 6:50 a.m. and again from 3:50 to 7 p.m. and the current will again be average. Despite the falling rain, grass pollen levels will be elevated both days.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Edelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
All the candlelights, this is it, the night of nights. No more rehearsing and nursing a part, we know every card by heart. All the candlelights, this is it, we'll hit the heights, you know what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it.
Next, we tune in the latest episode of the I Have Seen Niagara radio theater show from G. Lucas Crane and Rick Royer. The show airs Saturday mornings on the WGXC Morning Show between 9 and 10 a.m. and every early Wednesday night just after midnight.
This is the best rib sub I have ever had. A woman yells to no one in particular at Devil's Hole Pizza and Ribs. We've even had barbecue in Louisiana, and it's not as good as this, she utters into the void. Her husband looks down, half-heartedly poking at the few remaining baked beans scattered below. His stomach is not so full that he can't swallow the first response that comes to mind. Sweetheart, we've never been to Louisiana. We've never even been outside of Niagara County in all of our 55 years together. This, he does not say. It's just too much trouble, so he says nothing. He just thinks about how it's getting worse. She is being lost to time. And he feels there is little he can do but watch the decline. But even though she is not the same woman he once knew, he has learned after all these years that he will love her no matter what. Love was out of his control. So he carries on, poking at the beans on his plate, which overlaps with her plate, since the table that they're sitting on is much too small for two people. But it's the only table at this establishment, usually used by people waiting for their takeout orders. The presence of other people sitting here eating takes Zach L. Keeba by surprise when he enters. This doesn't seem like the kind of place for dining in. He stutter steps as he walks past their table, thinks of saying something but he doesn't, too awkward. So he breezes up to the counter and addresses the hole in the wall, underneath the sign that says, Place Order Here.
Hey, buddy, you back there?
Remember me? I was here yesterday.
I'm only in town one more night. Food was amazing.
Loved it.
Gotta get me some more before I head out of town.
A large, shadowy figure in the back of the kitchen says nothing. So Zach just places his takeout order. Half rack of ribs, coleslaw, baked beans, slice of buffalo chicken pizza, a loganberry, and two dipping sauces, spicy barbecue, and creamy horseradish. As he waits, the old man stares at him, transfixed. His attention is not at all seized by jealousy, he tells himself, just curiosity. He wonders what his story is, this young, beautiful man with pointy boots and a backwards newsboy cap. He decides he must be gay, from a big city, or both. If he's rich, he does resent him a little. And if he's not rich, the guy must be up to no good. But no, not jealous at all. Zach's order is ready. A grocery-sized paper bag dangles from a meaty hand sticking out of the hole in the wall. Zach grabs the bag, puts a wad of cash in the hand, keep the change. He sets the bag of styrofoam containers in the passenger seat of his Mazda Miata and heads to his motel. Devil's Hole remains behind, a quiet diorama behind glass, with an old couple sitting there underneath fluorescent lights at a much too small table. The woman is talking, but her husband is too deep in thought. Nothing is registering in his brain. He just nods and gets smaller in the distance as it all slowly disappears into a different plot. hospital corners. That's the secret to a well-made bed. And the maid working on room 33 cranks them out like a machine.
Position a flat sheet. A flat sheet is a sheet.
Bottom sheet corners tucked, crisp under mattress, not a wrinkle. Top corner folded, 45 degrees, hanging, tucked, clean, smooth the edge. The maid looks just as tidy and crisp as the beds she makes. She's like a maid from a different era. Fully starched uniform of black dress, white buttons, and lace apron at the waist. But before she is done cleaning room 33, its guest has arrived. It's Zach, rolling his sports car into the spot in front of the room marked with a 33 in yellow paint. A pampered, sparkling motorcycle is the only other vehicle in the parking lot. He sees that the door to his room is open. Then he sees the maid emerge while tying off a bag of garbage. Confused, he calls to her. Hey, this is my room. I'm still here another night. Yes, I'm sorry, she replies. We just figured you might like some nice, fresh bedding and a tidying up. I'll only be another minute. Kinda strange to be cleaning a room when the guest hasn't requested it, right? Especially at 8 p.m., he asks. She just smiles and goes right back to cleaning the room. He watches her work, struck by her elegance and long, sharp form.
I guess I can wait.
He sets his bag of food on the hood and gets a head start on dinner by popping open one of his to-go boxes and taking a few bites of pizza. He peers into the room through the open door as he chews, hardly taking an eye off the contours of the maid as she maneuvers around the bed. She gathers her supply onto a small cart and then takes one last step back to inspect, or perhaps admire, her work. A perfectly made bed, not a crumb on the floor or out of place, and this is how she always sets a room. Left without a history of guests. All yours, she says, as she pushes the cart past him.
Enjoy your stay at the Cascade Motel.
He gloms a few more leers at the restrained way her tight dress shapes her exit. A pervert's grin flashes across his face, and then he heads into the room. He is immediately struck by how immaculately clean it is. And bright, freakishly bright white. White blanket, white sheets, white pillows, white table and chairs and walls. He notices one new feature as well. The drab orange curtains have been replaced with delicate bands of white lace. His deep red barbecue ribs scream as they enter this virginal chamber. He wastes no time in rearranging the maid's work by setting up an emergency dinner area. Pulls up a table next to the bed, sets the phone and the lamp from the table onto the floor next to him, pulls a second chair over on which to rest excessive styrofoam containers. The ribs look garish and crystalline. He eats them like an animal without napkins, it occurs to him. The shadow at Devil's Hole forgot to give him napkins. Jesus, he whispers to himself. Barbecue ribs and no fucking napkins. He looks around, then heads to the bathroom to grab two clean white lace trim washcloths. He sets the beans and the coleslaw on the chair, the ribs, loganberry, half slice of pizza and sauces on the side table, and he sits facing it all from the edge of the bed. A drip of spicy barbecue dip drops onto the side of the white bed. Loganberry seeps from the improperly closed lid onto the white rug. The red drenched washcloths rub a tint against the white walls they're sitting against. After he finishes as much as he can, he stuffs the empty containers into a garbage can that seems smaller than the garbage he's trying to fit into it. The aftermath of his meal has left a devastating smell in the air. He is too much a part of it to notice it, but he does notice the TV. He normally doesn't watch TV, but whenever he's in a motel, he's compelled to at least turn it on, flip through it a bit, and then usually turn it right back off. He finds the remote velcroed to the top of the TV. He turns it on, but there's just a thin white line across the black screen. No sound. He flips through, all the same. He gives up without much of a fight, just leaving the TV hanging there with the white line on its screen. He can hear the TV from the room next door, though, and it makes him envious. The walls of this motel are paper thin, so without any straining, he can tell that the guest in room 34 is watching some sensational show about animal attacks. A chimp mauls his owners at a birthday party.
I had no idea a chimpanzee was capable of doing that to a human. He got all my fingers on each hand, gouged out my left eye, and bit my rear end so deep that it damaged my sciatic nerve. That's why I can't walk. He also got my wife's thumb, took that, I was kicking at it from my...
He wants to watch TV like the guy in room 34.
Worst birthday ever.
But instead, he just digests and stares ahead at the bright white wall. His ears pick up the clacking sound of high heels in the distance. They are coming closer, louder. They seem to slow down right outside of his door, then stop. Whoever it is, she's right on the other side of his door. He sits up, alert. But then the footsteps start up again and stop just a few feet away. And there's a knock on the door next to him. Room 34. The door opens. Zach puts his ear to the wall, and he can hear voices in the next room, crystal clear, as if it were his own.
Hi, can I help you?
The guest in room 34 answers the door in his t-shirt and sweatpants. He's in his mid-50s, rugged and sleepy, and completely surprised to open the door to find a beautiful lady on the other side of it. She's dressed for a night out, yet carrying a large box. Makeup, pumps, and a big stupid cardboard box that she needs both arms outstretched to carry. Hey, how's your night going? Is that your motorcycle? She asks. Yes, it is. Do I know you? Yes, of course I do. I do. Nah, we've never met. I'm just from around the area, she says. I stop by the motel sometimes to sell some merchandise and just get to know folks. And I saw your handsome motorcycle and thought, gee, I'd really like to see who this fella is. She tells him her name is Nicole. Tonight she is selling decorative hourglasses. Cheap-looking things made of bright-colored plastic, filled with white sand that falls on a tiny replica of Niagara Falls. Part hourglass, part snow globe, all tchotchke.
You're going door-to-door at night selling hourglasses?
Well, the wagon wheel. You know, the bar. It's right nearby, and I move a lot of product there, so I always figure to stop here afterwards to see if any out-of-towners might want a souvenir.
Their conversation is brief. She never even sits. But they cover a lot of ground in the short period of time. The guest in room 34 has clearly been yearning for human contact. He instantly opened up about his recent divorce, his early retirement due to a spinal injury, how he can't ride his motorcycle for too long because of his back, but he still likes to ride it when he can. He lives a little over an hour away in Rochester. He just wanted to get away, see the falls, and try his luck at the casino. He's been feeling lonely lately, he tells her that. Just good to get out. Even as he spilled all this to her, in the back of his mind, he was puzzled by this random woman standing in his tiny motel room. Do you like them? She inquires.
Sure, but it's very odd.
No doubt about it. Very odd.
Is there anything else I can offer you tonight?
He pauses. Too many things go through his head. He takes a good look at her, trying to decode her intentions. And he suddenly senses something strange about her. Makes his skin crawl. There's a dead look in her eyes, completely disconnected from the sparkle of her smile.
No, I'm fine. I'll take one. An hourglass. Just an hourglass. How much?
Oh, okay, an hourglass then. Here, then how about this one? It's so you. Just $8. He quickly pushes a $10 bill towards her and goes quiet. Are you sure there's nothing else I can interest you in tonight, sweetie? He says no, and she packs her box to leave. But before she does, she turns to him. Well, enjoy your stay. Oh, and these hourglasses, by the way? The sands only fall in one direction. You'll see. Back in room 33, Zach hears every word of this, standing with his face to the wall. After he heard her leave room 34, he excitedly hoped his door was next. He is curious about those additional services. Zach L. Keebaugh is a party boy, and his appetite for adventure is even higher than his appetite for a good rack of ribs. He waits. but she walks right by his door. He hears her heels walking through the parking lot. He pulls the lace curtain aside and sees her sashaying away. Without hesitation, he pops open his door, looks to his left, and then hurries after her. "Hey, excuse me, excuse me." She stops, but doesn't turn around. "You're the hourglass lady, aren't you? I'll take one. I'll take whatever you're offering." "Sorry, buddy, but I just sold the last one," she says, and then flings the empty box onto a pile of abandoned mattresses.
"But I have more back at my place if you'd like to follow me there."
"Hell yeah."
She leads him out of the parking lot and across the street. They traverse a field and walk across the baseball diamond at Hyde Park. Through the brush they go at the edge of the outfield, where she disappears into a dense stand of shrubs and briars. Looking ahead for her, he can't see her, but he can hear her giggle, and he can sense that she's close. The thicket didn't look very dense to him at first, but now that he's entered it, it feels like a jungle. Absolute darkness surrounds him. He hears nothing but the rustling of branches and the sound of her breath. She feels near. He reaches out and cannot feel her. She beckons. "This way," the voice, modulating, breaking. Her but not her. But he can't stop following. The air he gulps is getting thicker and moist. The blackness turns to swirls of purple and dark blue, unfolding in around him as the ornate plumage. There is a sense of euphoria with every inhalation. She laughs. He sees her face. Her body is formless. He moves forward, but not on his own. He slides along more down than across. Strange, but he feels a smile on his face, hot blood on his lips. Blinding flashes of a chimpanzee hacking at him, his big white teeth glinting in shards of moonlight. Zack sees himself being ripped apart, but only feels pleasure. The branches are decorated with his limbs. He caresses the chimp's face, the struggle, mouth to mouth, and limb to limb to limb. Suddenly, all sounds deafening. The chimp shrieks. Nicole belches a deep, baleful laugh and grows, and spreads two legs made of trees, from which a corpse, mummified in lace, emerges.
"Come with us forever, party boy."
His spirit descends into a pit in the earth. His severed head licks his lips. His eyes have never seen so clearly. He felt so good he couldn't feel a thing. "I can't wait for you to take my place," he hears sung, echoing as if from a distant bathtub or light bulb. His body is in shreds. His mind is a mere sliver until it was completely swallowed by something beyond death. Worlds away, a baseball diamond sits, sparingly used, bored as dirt. Back at the motel, the guest in room 34 goes out for a smoke. He notices a maid making up the bed, although the Mazda is still parked in the spot for room 33. The room is so clean it almost glows. But it's after 10 p.m. Why is she making up a room at this hour? None of my business, he tells himself. He takes a couple more deep sucks on his cigarette and looks as far as he can into the distance. He goes back into his room and shuts the door. The sand has emptied to the bottom of the hourglass, so he flips it over. But somehow, the sand no longer flows. He stretches and feels no pain in his back. "You know something," he thinks to himself? "I think I'll go for a nice long ride tomorrow." Thank you.
I'm Tom Rowe here in Accra, and I'm sitting with Johann Dietrich. I keep saying it slightly wrong, don't I?
Dietrich, yeah, Dietrich.
And joining us virtually is Kaylee Staples in Montreal.
Hi, everyone.
Yes.
Hey, everyone.
And you guys make up, are teaming together as Glass Salt, and you are current artist in residence here at Wave Farm. Tell us what Glass Salt is, or what it means to you, I guess.
Glass Salt is an experimental music duo comprised of Kaylee and I. We've been collaborating on music since 2016, and we do primarily electronic improvisational music together, ambient pop or soft noise or dream noise, I guess, are some ways that we kind of quickly describe the music that we do, but a lot of vocals, processing, custom electronics, some software, audio generators, different kinds of things.
One of the main components of Glass Salt as a musical project is also the Harvester, which is a custom sampler that Johann invented, and that we both play. And in my the concept of our project, that's really at the heart of the sort of technical aspect of what we do. Hmm. Johann, do you want to describe the Harvester?
Yeah. What is the Harvester harvest?
It harvests everyday sounds, so sounds sort of around you. The Harvester is a handheld portable sampler and synthesizer that lets you hold on to a sound around you so it can record sounds, and then it will automatically map it to a pentatonic scale so you can make music with everyday sounds, essentially. So I use it with like whistling a lot, so I'll make a whistle sound, and then this instrument has buttons that will essentially have mapped that sound to different pitches that you can then use to, what we use for like our musical improv and compositions.
All right, and how are you incorporating radio into this particular project, I guess?
Totally. So with this piece called Celeste, we are engaging with the two kind of extreme ends of the electromagnetic spectrum. On one side, we're engaging with very low frequency radio phenomena that occurs in the atmosphere when the sun hits the magnetosphere and creates these kind of radio electromagnetic phenomena that can be picked up by different receivers. Shout out to Stephen McGreevy. He has a website called Aurora Choruses. But he invented this receiver that can pick up these sounds. And they sound sort of like clicks and pops. Almost like, it kind of sounds like static, but it's a little less stochastic than, or like uniform as like radio static. But because of the way of like the Earth's curvature and the way that like impulses will like decompose over distances, you'll get high frequencies arriving at you before low frequencies when these phenomena occur. So this essentially creates different kind of like pitched stochastic sounds. So some of them sound like short whistles or chirps. And so we were able to get a few recordings with the receiver that let you hear some of these chirps and whistles. It can also pick up these like very, very beautiful but rare phenomena that sound like dawn choruses, as if like a bunch of birds are waking up in the forest. These are just very like different kind of pitched whistles that go on for a long amount of time. So you have to get up pretty early to use. You have to get up pretty early and be very far away from power lines. So being here in Accra for Wave Farm was like the perfect opportunity to use this receiver, being that we're pretty far out in the Catskills. I drove maybe like 10 miles away to a hiking trail where there was very little power out there. And
we've had some artists before on the property try to pick up the sounds and had trouble.
Yeah. The grounds here are pretty well powered, especially closer to the Wi-Fi nodes. So you can faintly hear the clicks on site, but definitely it's overshadowed by the power lines that are on site here. So you have to go pretty far out somewhere else, usually in a clear area too. It can't be you can't have a lot of tree coverage, or else it kind of occludes being able to receive that. And then pre-dawn, because of the way that the sun, as it quote unquote rises, that's when like some of the more interesting atmospheric phenomena take place. So it's like an ideal time to pick it up. Otherwise, by the time the sun is fully out, you're not going to get any of these kind of more interesting sounds with it.
And Kaylee, why is the project called Celeste?
Well, that the Celeste name comes from Johann. Johann has like an incredible poetic gift of naming glass salt tracks and pieces and projects. But that is inspired by the celestial bodies and connecting with that idea in our project description of tuning our ears to the sky and making music with the celestial bodies and sounds that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting because as we explored both, you know, the idea of the cosmos and getting our inspiration artistically from stars and pulsars, other phenomena, we also were diving into radio and the radio format, and we got to interview two really interesting people. One, Johann's father, Trevor Diedrich, and Johann's friend, Abram Morphew. Both who have a strong background in radio technology and radio activity, but it was sort of a new surprise to me to see how much their practice is also related to space and the cosmos, and how much radio art and radio broadcast has to do with these larger transmissions from like the outer realms of the galaxies.
Mm-hmm. And so what did you learn from those two folks?
Well, one, maybe Johann can describe some of these stories. You'll hear in the piece, Trevor described the phenomena of skipping and skip cards, which was something new for me to hear.
Yeah, my dad grew up in Jamaica. My whole family grew up in Jamaica, and my dad was also doing a lot of radio at the time. He was doing a lot of CB radio, and this was just the way that he describes it is that Jamaica is kind of a small, poor, isolated island, and they would just, things would kind of come to the island, and people would rapidly like gravitate towards it, take what they could. This is one of my dad's words. And so I think when radio was like came, he was really attracted to it. But they discovered and kind of figured out that with changes in the atmosphere at different times of the year, depending on different kinds of climate as well, that you were able to transmit and receive radio by bouncing it off of parts of the sky. In this phenomenon, or this like technique is for them known as skipping, they were able to reach from Jamaica places in the U.S. But also Australia and New Zealand and just very, very distant places around the world that they couldn't imagine being able to receive or transmit to. So they would build like DIY antennas and really kind of overdrive them with wattage that would probably be a finger wagged at by the FCC as far as like talking about like pirate radio. But when they would make contact with someone through the skipping procedure, what they would try to do is get their address, and then they would send them postcards in the mail, and then they would also receive postcards from people that they were talking to. And these cards, they referred to as skip cards, and it was kind of like a badge of honor that you were able to see how far you were able to reach and how many skip cards you collected. And so almost like baseball cards, he said, you would collect these skip cards being like, I was able to reach Greenland and I was able to reach India. And it became, almost like badges of honor, or just like, you know, these collected like travel logs. I don't know, maybe like a stamp in your passport or something like that.
Well, it's interesting. There's like a theory that reggae kind of started in Jamaica because of people listening to pop music from beamed in from Florida and the United States and from South America, and they all mixed together, and that's how reggae got out, was very radio influenced. And now you guys are using these roots in Jamaican radio, more atmospheric sounds, and creating some sort of new electronic music, sort of.
Totally. Yeah, it's been a very funny journey to unpack and kind of see the trail that we have like been walking on all this time. And I think we did this residency in Toronto last November, where I kind of realized a lot of what I was building and doing was really directly influenced by my dad. And it wasn't anything I was like very consciously aware of until that moment. And in that, I've just been like, I wouldn't want to say incorporating, but like using conversation with my dad or interviews with my dad to kind of learn about this history and then bring it into the work that we're doing with Glass Salt to also like let people know about these like really cool stories.
All right, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Johann Diedrich and Kaylee Staples, the two current artists in residence at Wave Farm, who are preparing a program to listen to on Saturday, August 6th from 4 to 6 p.m. One question we always ask artists in residence when we do these interviews is, I guess I'll start with Kaylee. Do you have an early radio memory or something? When did you first become interested in radio?
I mean, that's a really great question. I think for me, I grew up in like a rural setting in the countryside. And so being in the car being in the truck as a child is always about like what radio you can pick up and not. And so I think I always associate it with like motion and traveling and the idea of place, like where you can pick up certain signals. And interestingly for my practice, I think artistically that's something and transmission arts are something that I've come to more recently. And I always think of radio as very activity adjacent, like something when you're cooking, when you're traveling, it feels like I associate it with freedom for that reason, because it's something that you can access wherever you are, and it seems to go along with activity that you're doing. And so for me, it was always something that felt like a little bit of a like a surprise, or like stopping by a venue and checking out the music. It was that like, let's see what's happening where we are, let's see what we can access now. As I was doing this project and delving more into various radio communities, I started to realize like how strong and powerful a community building aspect radio has. Listening to Trevor, realizing that there's been like a history of like two-way communication, CB radio, all of this is sort of new to me, and it's something I want to deepen my awareness of and actually creating more of a radio practice.
All right, Johann, you have a early radio story?
Yeah, this is like it's a pretty strong memory. I, growing up, used to listen to the radio all the time, listen to a lot of rap and hip hop radio stations. This is down in Florida. And, I also had a tape recorder, and I have this very, very strong memory of wanting to record Nas and Lauryn Hill's If I Ruled the World, which I don't know, maybe if you're familiar with the song. And I would stay up as long as possible until the song came back on the radio, and then would hit record on a cassette player to record the song so I'd have it on tape and could listen back to it over and over again. So I just remember I have that memory of like sitting next to the radio and waiting for that song to come back. And this is like, you know, top 40 radio, so it eventually would, but you didn't really know when. It wasn't like a big single song, let's say, so it was kind of buried a little bit in the programming. But when it came on, it was just like the most exciting like oh my god, like, it's here finally, and like, it's gonna go away soon, so I gotta like get it while I can. And radio programmers, especially for pop music, I don't know if this is just exclusively hip hop or rap, but they'll only play like a third of the song or like two thirds of the song, so you also don't know how much of the song you're about to get before like the DJ comes back and it's like, you're listening to Power 97. So you got what you could. Like, it was just like whatever was available, and whenever it became available was what you were going to get. So I just remember very strongly.
So did you record it several times and then piece it together?
I don't think I had the patience or the mind that expanded to think about how I could even pull that off. But I definitely remember I was able to get that onto cassette, and I don't really have much memories of then, like, maybe listening to it as much as I do about this moment of collection.
Trying to capture it was the hunting.
Yeah, totally. And even like other kind of songs that I just loved on the radio, like Raquel's "In a Dream," which is one of these like '90s freestyle songs, kind of very dancey, like Ace of Base adjacent type of music. But it had this really, really captivating low-end section to it. And I remember waiting to hear it, like waiting. And I think it was part of whatever part of the radio programming where that kind of music only came on very late at night as well. So it's like staying up a little late to finally hear this one song that I don't really know or can't buy. You know, the CD's like $30 or whatever. So like, this is it. This is how I can get access to it. When it would come on, I would just kind of like huddle next to the speaker and just kind of be like curl myself into a ball and really kind of enjoy that brief moment.
Kaylee, do you only work with Glass Salt, or do you have your own work too?
I have a few different projects. I have a solo project under my name that's Kaylee Staples, that's more of like a pop electronica project. And I also have an improvising avant rock project, Anthems of the Void, with Bradford Reed. So those are my three main projects right now.
And how about you, Johan? Other than Glass Salt, what do you do?
Musically, this is the main project. I do perform solo under my own name, pretty infrequently, I would say, but. It is a thing that I do and have a practice, just by myself. But I do a lot of audio-based installations, programming, performance, sculptural work, hardware, software, building instruments, doing workshops.
Yeah, tell us, what are some of the instruments you've made?
The Harvester being probably the not the only, but I think the biggest one that I've been focused on for the past few years. I make a lot of like analog noise circuits for kind of percussive and rhythmic backdrops. On our first tape, Greetings, there's a lot more of that kind of occurring in the music, less so these days because those circuits just don't exist anymore. They're kind of broken as homemade circuits want to do. Trying to think, mostly I would say like installations, then like interactive installations, installations where you use bodies as capacitive interfaces, so you can touch each other to play back music. Different kinds of like large string instruments, like room sized instruments that were string is kind of tied from different sides, and you can pluck it, and they're attached to piezo elements, so the plucking vibration will produce like a digitally synthesized sound. That's mostly.
That's a good answer. Yeah. That's an awful lot. So I guess final question is maybe a two-part question is, if people tune in tomorrow, Saturday, from 4 to 6 to hear Celeste, what will it be like? And what did you sort of get out of this residency? Or I don't know if learn is the right word, but what do you take away from this residency?
Yeah, so what you'll hear are original music composition by us. I think we, in kind of taking and running with the fact of this being a radio broadcast, we definitely spent some time considering